the role of the Pope is to be the leader of the Catholic Church, preserve teachings which are historical foundations, and promote clarity of faith to the world, many have come to fear that Pope Francis is turning the religious papacy into a political papacy which strives for social reengineering in a manner of ways. My next guest is the author of a best-selling book regarding concerns about the Vatican, which have caught the interest of many Catholics and has raised the ire of Pope Francis and his loyalists. It's called The Dictator Pope, The Inside Story of the Francis Papacy. He's the author of a series of books on both Catholic history and biographies. Henry Sear, thanks for being here today, Mr. Sear.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
I want to lay the foundation of the Pope that you present, because it's certainly a different presentation than the manufactured image that Pope Francis and his Vatican allies wish the people to have. Is it fair to say that Pope Francis is an individual who has been inspired by Argentina's Juan Perón and has been heavily guided by someone who you write about in your book, Cardinal Martini?
Cardinal Martini. I don't know to what extent the Pope is a follower of Cardinal Martini. He's certainly a follower of Juan Perón, who was dictator of Argentina at the time that Bergoglio was a boy. And like so many Argentinians of that generation, Bergoglio was a great admirer of him. And when he was a priest in his 30s, he was supporting a group which was working to restore Perón to power, which they succeeded in doing in 1974. So, yes, what I say in my book is that Pope Francis is very much in the mold of Juan Perón.
And for Pope Francis to ascend to the papacy as he did, the hope for Francis to become Pope was not the first time. He had allies, and if you want to get conspiratorial in a way, I guess maybe you can call Francis the Manchurian Pope, much like that classic movie, The Manchurian Candidate, because he seemed to be guided, manufactured, and had the root of what many of the liberal side of the Vatican wanted to have, but they were unsuccessful in their first attempt to get him to where they wanted him to be, weren't they?
Yes. I think the attraction of Bergoglio for the St. Gallen group, who were the people who promoted his candidacy, the attraction of Bergoglio was that he was a Latin American, and for liberal Catholics, the Latin American Church has a prestige because of its support of liberation theology. Now, Bergoglio was never a supporter of liberation theology, but I think he benefited from this left-wing prestige of the Latin American Church, and especially of the Latin American Jesuits.
If you look through papal history, is this the first attempt? Was this the first success in liberalization of the Catholic Church?
Oh, not at all. No, the other notable liberal pope was Paul VI, elected in 1963, in very similar circumstances. In fact, there was also at that time a secret meeting before the conclave where liberal cardinals worked for the election of Martini. You could say that there have been relatively liberal popes before, but this is the first one in recent memory.
Now, I bring that question up and those facts of history that you present, because what was the success of those past attempts to liberalize the Catholic Church? Because it seems like for the rank and file the Church goes, the faithful, the Church always appeared, as far as their memory is concerned, is to be traditional teaching, not the liberal doctrine that seems to be being pushed by this Pope and the ones that you mentioned before.
Well, under Pope Paul VI, you wouldn't have had liberal doctrine coming from the Pope as such, but you certainly had very revolutionary doctrine coming from theologians, and that has prepared the ground for Pope Francis. But it's true that he has spoken personally in a much more radical way than any of his predecessors.
Talking with Henry Sear, his book, The Dictator Pope, The Inside Story of the Francis Papacy, and you were listening to Issues and Ideas. We are told that this is a pope, Pope Francis, who is a pope of reform. When you look at those claims of reform and reality, at least up to this point in time, how big of a difference is there?
An enormous difference. There's the two things bear no relation at all. The majority of cardinals who voted for Pope Francis were particularly concerned for the reform of the Vatican itself, the finances of the Vatican and the internal state of the Vatican, and also reform of the problem of clerical sexual abuse. Now, the pope that they elected was supposed to deal with these problems, and the fact is that Francis's record has been extremely bad on all of them.
Certainly in the working field, we get into problems with our boss, we have disagreements with our boss, and some more than others like to voice their disagreement with the bosses. And granted, there's a price you pay, and other bosses like it as the fact that you're being painfully honest, and they like that. If you object or get in the way of Pope Francis, is there a price to pay?
Definitely. The famous case of this was three officials of the Congregation for the Doctrine for the Faith who were hauled up personally before Pope Francis, accused of criticizing him, and summarily dismissed. And the whole of the Vatican lives in fear of suffering the same fate.
That leads me to the obvious question. When you have actions by the boss to that degree, what does that do for the rest of the body of the Vatican? Certainly does not encourage a positive work environment, to say the least.
Definitely not. Even if Pope Francis had actually been successful in reforming the Vatican, you could still criticize him for the bad atmosphere that he's produced in the Vatican. I was living in Rome for 4 years, and everybody I spoke to, of any party or none, told me of this atmosphere of fear that existed in the Vatican. This is something that wasn't known at all under previous popes.
That's certainly in the Vatican. If you look outside the Vatican for the weekly audiences of the Pope, the numbers are telling a shocking story. I mean, there had been concerns, especially here in the States, after the sex scandals came to light, about decreasing church attendance. But when you look at the audience in St. Peter's Square, weekly average has gone from the numbers in the 50,000s down to, well, some are estimating now, could be as few as 10,000 people a week show up. There's certainly among the Catholic faithful, at least by attendance-wise, a large disagreement with the direction this pope is leading the Catholic faith.
Yes, I think they stopped publishing the figures now because they're so discreditable. As you say, they were 50,000 average at the beginning of Francis's pontificate. The figures for 2016 were not released, but they're believed to be under 10,000, an incredible drop.
I mean, just by eyesight, if you turn onto the cable, the Catholic cable channel, EWTN, for the weekly audience broadcast, you think back to when you used to not be able to see a piece of pavement under all the feet, and it looks like the attendance of a poorly performing soccer game at this point.
Absolutely, yes. And this really is the test, because although the media are giving Pope Francis a very easy ride, if you look at his popularity among Catholics as such, it's a very different picture.
It is indeed a truthful picture that Henry Sear presents in The Dictator Pope, The Inside Story of the Francis Papacy, one that will make some feel uncomfortable, but maybe that's what truth has to do in order to institute a remedy for harm that's being inflicted, in this case philosophically, through the actions of Pope Francis and his allies in the Vatican. The Dictator Pope, The Inside Story of the Francis Papacy. Henry Sear, thank you so much for your writing, for your honesty, your presentation of the facts, and for being here today.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.